This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me Brian Fernandez. And it's time for the Ringgit and Sense show. On Tuesday, the Employment Insurance System Bill was tabled in Parliament. The bill seeks to better protect some 6.5 million workers in the country by providing a safety net in the form of social security payments. It raises, of course, the question of unemployment as a very real possibility for all of us. Joining us this morning is Joyce Trott, Certified Financial Planner and CEO of Success Concepts. Thank you so much, Joyce, for joining us this morning. I want to begin with this simple question. I mean, do you think many of us, especially in the middle class, who have jobs, who take up loans for cars and houses, ever imagine that we would lose our jobs, not change jobs, but lose our jobs suddenly and for a sustained period of time? Is that even in our consciousness?
Well, I don't think so. A lot of us think that life will go on as it is and it'll never happen to me. So when it does happen to you, just like any other sudden events like death, illness, that sort of thing, disability, that's when you find that you are in a lurch and you're not prepared for it.
Yeah, and you know, Joyce, especially with, I'm in my 40s, I see this a lot with people who've lost high-income jobs and suddenly they're lost because they can't find an equivalent income level for their next job, and they have certain financial obligations and liabilities which they can't meet. So this is, again, the fact that they just totally lost when they've lost their job at 40 plus. It's never occurred to them they would be unemployed.
Yeah, so have we been in a situation because of full employment, because we have a situation where, in fact, there are more jobs and than there are people? We've had to import millions of people into this country, perhaps for lower-end jobs. But say it's lulled us into a kind of complacency about the possibility of unemployment. I mean, what do you think it will take for Malaysians to wake up to the fact that middle-class Malaysians, people in professional managerial jobs, to recognise that unemployment is a real possibility?
I think the thing is, we all need to realise that life is uncertain. The only certain things are death and taxes, as you know. So we need to plan for what I call an event which I call unexpected. So most of the time when we plan for unexpected events like death, permanent disabilities or even death, it is usually insurance. So it is the same thing with unemployment or retrenchment, something that you don't expect. So you can either transfer the risk of insuring that event to someone else, which is an insurer, or you actually build that risk yourself, or rather take that risk yourself by building up a certain fund to manage that event.
But so, Joyce, this insurance scheme by the government, I for one am in favour of it, because as Malaysians, we don't have a safety net or for lack of a better word, the dole equivalent, so to speak, in Malaysia. So we've got a couple of elements in terms of retirement and say safety and so forth. We've got our EPF, which we contribute to when we are employed. For many people, they seem to think that that's enough for their retirement. But what we should be doing is, of course, from a financial planning perspective, have at least 6 months of
Savings.
Uh-huh. Now, when we say 6 months of saving, is to meet all obligations in terms of our debt obligations, our monthly repayments, our living expenses, and so forth.
Yes.
That we need to have an element of private insurance to take care of catastrophic cover. So catastrophic events that happen to us, you know, healthcare and so forth. And then we also have to have a cash reserve. Now, that's in an ideal scenario. But then a lot of people don't have all those elements. So this is where this insurance scheme, I believe, will really help the average individual.
Well, what is it? You have looked at some of the outlines that have been reported in the paper. I know it's still being tabled. We don't know if it's going to be passed. But, you know, chances are it will be just because it's a bill coming from the government of the day.
Yeah.
And they clearly see some value in it. And I believe even the Socialist Party of Malaysia has come out to give it the thumbs up. Yeah. And in principle, they're giving it a thumbs up. But what are the elements in it that you think are useful for us to understand? This is individuals recognizing this is another tool for us, for our planning.
First of all, I like the fact that this scheme is an automatic a contribution by the employer and the employee on 0.25% each. I mean, I wish there's a tripartite thing where the government also contributes on a monthly basis on a certain percentage, but that's going to be worked out. So that particular concept works on what we call an automatic deduction right off before you even spend your money. It's based on a concept where save first and spend later. So I agree with you, Brian. It is a good scheme. It's just that how the details are being worked out. The other thing about Brian, what Brian said was that 6 months emergency, let me add, you need to add, and besides the 6 months emergency money, you need to add one more month for every liability you have. And that liability can be your parents, your relatives, even a pet.
Okay, what about the question? You use the expression save first and spend later, but for many people who have to contribute to the scheme, they might never use it, right? Because it only is for people who are genuinely unemployed, yes. Right? And so it is not like your EPF contributions where you do get, you're forced to save and you get to pull it, or where you take one of those insurance schemes that you put in money and then at some point you can actually take your money out, right?
Right.
This is uncertain. Do you think it will actually perhaps give pause to a lot of people be saying, I'm never going to get unemployed. Why should I be paying part of my money? It's essentially is a deduction. It's a tax
yes.
on me that I might never benefit from. In fact, in some ways, I don't want ever to have to benefit from this because that would mean I've lost my job.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the whole concept about insurance. It's a pooling of money, everyone into a fund where it can fund an unexpected event. So it is based on a concept where it's like and it is an insurance scheme. So even if you have an insurance policy, you may not ever suffer from a critical illness and you're still paying that amount into the insurance premiums. So therefore, that's one. Then the second thing is that the problem with human beings is inertia. So if this particular scheme is not in place, you need then to do it yourself, meaning you have to set aside either an insurance scheme yourself. Hopefully you get the right one because you may be sold on the wrong type scheme and you'll be paying even more premiums for a saving that is not so much at the end of the day. And secondly, would you even go and do something? As human beings, as I say, we have inertia.
So, and Joyce got a very good point because basically it's about the cost of the insurance. Because it's a community rated, so it's spread out across the entire community of working population, the premiums are actually relatively low, potentially relative to the cover or the returns that you could get if you are unemployed. If you went out and bought a policy directly, it'd be for the same benefits, it'd be substantially more expensive.
It could be a wrong policy for all you know.
Absolutely, where the agent gets the most commission.
I mean, the thing is, we look at a mature economy like Singapore, right?
Yeah.
And they recognize it as a problem, especially for people in their 40s and 50s who suddenly suffer job loss in the managerial and professional, you know, class of workers who are probably highly leveraged at that point, right? Their kids are growing up. They're probably in their early teens or they're looking at going into university. All these scenarios really build up to a sort of a recognizable social problem for the Singaporean government. I believe they have a scheme where they encourage a company, Singaporean companies, to employ people from that group. And the Singapore government actually contributes to the employment, to the salaries. Some, I think, 50% for the first 6 months, and then it's reduced in the second 6 months. So for a year, the government's actually helping pay your salary. So this is a problem that is already there in Singapore. It's not come to Malaysia as such, though, if you take a Uber or a Grab, one of these days, you actually find, and it's interesting enough, people who have moved into that because of job loss and they can't find a job that's commensurate with their former position.
And Sharad, that's a very good point. I take Uber and Grab all the time as well. And many of them, it's because of structural unemployment. Mm. So if you look at the oil and gas industry, for example, some of the jobs that these people have, especially very young people, because of the salaries, they were astronomical salaries that they were getting. Because of that bubble in the oil and gas business, there were 26-year-old guys earning $10,000 a month. Those jobs are never going to come back.
Yeah.
They're never going to earn that.
Okay. Our guest this morning on Ring & Sense is Joyce Chua, Certified Financial Planner and CEO of Success Concepts. We'll be back soon on BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Ringgit Sense Show. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Brian Fernandez. And our guest this morning, Joyce Chua, Certified Financial Planner and CEO of Success Concepts. We were talking about long-term unemployment. I'm wondering about the issue of changing expectations, right? You say, Brian, you mentioned a 26-year-old earning 10,000 ringgit. He perhaps, very quickly bought an expensive apartment. Now, and I'm wondering, what is the time frame to do this? Is you think, well, I'm never going to get that job back again. Mm-hmm. Should I sell that apartment? Should I, change my plans? Or do I just doggedly try to hold on to that million-dollar apartment and with the hopes that I will be able to earn that kind of money again?
Yeah, if the future looks bleak, the important thing is just unload everything.
Unload.
Huh? Unload.
And what would you unload first?
It would be something that's more liquid to unload. Therefore, my point about over-leveraging or over... I know someone who has 7 properties in his 20s.
In his 20s? Yes, you mean he's paid off for all those 7?
No, it's on loan. So because it was on dips, so it was very easy to actually own those properties. And he has actually got around doing 7 properties in a short while through some not so wise methods.
Right.
Yeah. So therefore, to be illiquid is actually a trap. So the first thing to unload are your liquid assets. And to unload a house, you probably take another 2 years. And by that time, you would have gotten into a credit card trap. Now, what we want to avoid is to go into an illiquid, insolvent situation. And that leads to bigger problems like the credit card interest rates, which you'll never be able to catch up with any kind of investments.
Right, you're saying about the credit card, especially because would you suggest the first thing you do when you recognize that you're going into a long-term unemployment situation is to snap those credit cards to prevent you from actually finding an easy way to pay things off?
Yes, because a credit card situation with outstanding balances, it's like a river. You'll never be able to get on shore, So you need to unload as fast as possible before the holes get bigger and bigger.
And, interestingly enough, Joyce, during the Asian financial crisis, so that tells you how old I am, I bought my first property. I was in a very young person at that point of time. I bought my first property and then the whole market crashed. I bought it in Sepang. And so my interest rates went up my repayment went from 1,000 ringgit to 1,500 ringgit.
Yeah, about 12%.
Yeah, literally. Yes. Yeah. So it was just a crazy number. And that's when I realized then, hey, this property is not going to appreciate as fast as I thought. I need to get rid of it. It actually took me more than 3 years to get rid of it.
Right.
And how I finally got rid of it was I moved to Sepang and lived in it for 5 months and worked on selling it. So literally your advice,
yes.
I've done that before because it was so difficult to
downsizing.
Do that.
Can you talk about illiquid assets? Yeah. I mean, can you give us examples of that?
Well, liquid assets, a very common one is a property. Yeah. Something that you cannot liquidate within, say, a month. Let's give it a month, all right? Or even half a month. Because if you're looking at in your investments, you can actually liquidate it within 5 to 10 days.
That's okay, so you're talking about your stocks and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, your stocks, your funds, your FDs, your savings.
Your cars, if you've got 3 cars.
Oh, yes, that's right. So, incidentally, Brian, I also invested in a property during the financial crisis, and that tells you how old I am as well. I bought my first home. Now, the purpose of the purchase was to stay in it. So, very importantly, when you buy a house, you need to ask yourself, what is this for? Is it for staying? Or is it for investments? So it was meant for me to stay, and I bought it at a height in a place that I wanted. But it was 1999, I believe. 1999, yeah. So somewhere around that. 1998, 1999, in a crisis. And it was tough, but I wanted to stay in it. So it there was not ever a problem of, can I rent it? Can I sell it? So what I did was I actually planned for my cash flow before I bought this. So I actually had 3 years cash flows, not cash flow planning stacked up for this particular purchase, because I knew it was illiquid and it was very difficult to sell it if I got into an unemployment situation.
So interesting, Joyce. So let me share what I did in the end and how I got rid of that property. And that's a good lesson in terms of expectations. So obviously, this was bought purely as speculation. It was in Sepang, the house prices were going to go up. And it took me 3 years or so to unload it. Now, at the end of the day, what I did, which was the best decision I ever made, I took a huge loss on it.
Right.
And that was the best decision I ever made.
Okay, so this is it, right? So people are at the cliff edge and they're thinking, I need the money, but if I sell, I'm going to make a loss. I mean, Joyce, how do you figure that out? How do you make the calculation of selling at a loss versus limiting your liabilities, right?
Right.
Because you kind of end it. You end that story.
Yeah. Well, it's to me, it's mathematical. It's an equation of cost and benefit in terms of returns. So what is the cost of it, of this situation, if I were to keep the house versus the benefit of keeping it? So the cost of it would be extreme cash flow trauma, right?
Yes,
and getting into, say, a credit card situation or even ruining my relationships because, you know, money, you know, is gone in the family and that's it. Out goes the love.
So, and also maybe borrowing from family.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, that could be also a dangerous route to take, isn't it?
And not able to pay them back, and that ruins the relationship entirely. So what's the cost of holding on to this just because maybe it's pride or I'm just purely in love with this asset versus taking a risk like what you did? Taking the cost of bearing the cost of selling it at a loss like you did, Brian, which was good.
And the thing is, just lessons learned in terms of I sold it because I told myself, you know, it stops my cash flow every month in terms of negative cash flow of $1,005 a month. And also the fact that I looked at it and I said, I can redeploy this to another asset that would make me money.
Looking back, would you have regretted selling it? I mean, now that property prices would probably have been more than what you sold many years ago, would it have been a better choice to keep it?
I think a very Chinese businessman kind of attitude, which is basically, I lose in this, never mind, I will make it in somewhere else, which is essentially what happened.
It's opportunity cost, isn't it? Yes, that's right.
And also mental, because you're reminded that, hey, this is not a good investment, and then it makes you fearful.
That's right.
So what you do is you cut your losses, you take stock of it and don't make the same mistakes again. So draw lessons from that.
That's right. This is always what I say in my seminars. We hang on to our losers too long, we sell our winners too soon.
And why do you think people do that?
Well,
is it all psychological?
It is a psychology in finance whereby we are lost. We avert loss. We don't want to have, it gives us three times the pain of a loss than compared to the joy of a return. That's been proven. So we just cannot take that sort of thing. So we are lost. We don't want to experience loss. So it gives us that sense of I'm not good at such things.
I mean, we are in a situation, we have listeners who've been weighing in on the unemployment insurance scheme with them. Some of them, I think Dunstan Ho, saying that this is like paying for lazy people. And also somebody who's WhatsApp us and, at 018-789-8899 saying that, well, the EIS should be part of SOC. So, and this is, in some ways, a conversation that is at the part of the, I mean, the EIS has brought up the possibility, the specter of unemployment. Now, when you speak to young people in their 20s who are just starting out in life, Joyce, what would you say to them about the question of unemployment? How would you even broach it? Or would they just laugh at you and say, my God, I've just come out of university. I've just spent all this money and I'm going to get a great job. And why are you talking about unemployment?
I mean, just like we buy an insurance policy, we've been approached by agents to buy policies and hedge against the risk of death, disability, that sort of thing. You need to also hedge against an unexpected event such as unemployment, retrenchment. I even talk about the possibility of other events like death of a spouse, divorce, separation, that sort of thing, things happen to your children, So here we're talking about unemployment. It is also an insurance, EIS is an insurance plan, a risk management plan against an event such as this. So plan in your finances unexpected events such as unemployment.
Yeah, so Joyce, at the end of the day, what lasting advice would you give a very young person now who's, say, in their 20-somethings? What are the three things that they need to do?
First, plan early. Be very prepared for unexpected events, not just, death and disability, for as we're talking about unemployment, plan early. 2, save as much as you can. And 3, look for ways to make your savings grow above your inflation rate.
Okay. Thank you very much, our guest, Joyce Gold, Certified Financial Planner and CEO of Success Concept. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're coming up to the news. Brian Fernandez and myself, Sharad Kutin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.